to it. But you know, if you're interested in serious history of science, that's kind of interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a lot of books like that. I read biographies of Max Planck and Einstein Richard Feynman. A lot of great minds, and I read the popular science books. Sometimes they annoy me. They simplify things to a point where it's not really accurate what they say, and I understand sort of why they do that, but it still annoys the heck out of me. Right now, lately, I've been reading a little bit more fiction than nonfiction. I actually started to put up a little book review section on my list. Haven't entered anything the last few weeks because, you know, fiction doesn't really lend itself to, I guess, the science or technical concepts.
Yeah, I was a fan of Tom Clancy's techno thrillers for a while back in the 80s. You know, some of his sort of serious quote-unquote techno thrillers, not some of the, video game ones that are actually written by someone else. And, those were kind of fun. It's really sad that he died a couple of years ago, relatively young, because I think he really would have had a lot of fun with some of the stuff that's happening now, and some of his books were really prescient, and pretty close to things that actually wound up happening. Go ahead.
Yes, I particularly liked his Jack Ryan books, and Hunt for Red October, that was a movie I loved. I must have seen that movie at least six times over the years. I enjoyed every bit of it. I didn't mind that Sean Connery played a Lithuanian with a Scottish accent. I didn't mind it at all. It was fun.
The book was better than the movie. You probably read the book also. Books usually are. I thought of that book the other day when they talked about the... maybe Fiasco, where best attack submarine managed to hit a seamount and get a couple of guys hurt and damaged the ship. And I was thinking, if they had Jonesy in the sonar shop, that wouldn't have happened. Go ahead.
Yeah, I read the book. I haven't reread the book. You know, there are a few books that I will reread. I don't know if I'll continue to reread them. You know, at least once every 10 years, I read Dune. Once every 10 years, I find myself reading Lord of the Rings. But there are very few that I do that with. But movies, I love to rewatch good movies because they're still good. You know. The fact that I know how it ends is immaterial. It's just, you know, the whole experience that I enjoy.
Yeah, some stories are incredibly suspenseful. It's incredibly good even when you know how they end. Apollo 13 is like that. We all know they got home in the end, but it's still very well done and a good story.
Yeah, I mean, there are some stories where you need not to know the resolution in order to really get the most out of it. But as you said, there's a lot of historical films where a lot of people going in to see it know how it ended. Hopefully they don't change the ending of historic films too much. But yeah, it's not the destination, they say, it's the journey.
Yeah, I just got the classic, I think the Barbara Tuchman book from Audible, August 1914. And it's fascinating, even though I know the story of some of the incidents in the first month of World War One. So, you know, I get that. In fact, I hadn't realized the importance of one of the incidents historically. I know I was the Gulbin and Breslau at the beginning of World War One, and I hadn't realized how instrumental that incident was bringing Turkey into the war against the Allies, resulting in the Admiral's court-martial. Anyway, so, yeah, history, even when you know the outcome, can be amazingly interesting to read.
Yeah, and with a well-read book, I mean, it'll unearth things that even if you're well-read on the subject, it'll give you a fresh new angle. World War One was a terrible war. There were no good guys, just bad guys and mediocre guys. You know, there's a reason why cable channels have 15,000 documentaries of World War Two and very few about World War One.
Well, it's more than that. The cable channels need visuals, and there just isn't that much footage on World War One because, you know, movies were kind of new things. So I think that's part of the problem why there isn't as much on World War One. Yeah, I just said in some ways there were no good guys. It's also just a, you know, a very complicated story. And, you know, why the war started. I mean, World War II is almost straightforward in comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt that there's a lot less visual material, but if there was a good against evil theme that you could run through World War One as they do regularly through World War Two with ease, I think there would be a lot more documentaries on the subject. It's just that it was incredibly complicated, and ultimately no one looked good at the beginning, at the middle, and at the end. I mean, unfortunately, we, England and France, basically kicked Germany in the balls with the Versailles Treaty. And, you know, it could have ended differently. It did in World War II. People's attitude has thankfully changed. Hopefully they learn from history. And you know, the history is the way it is today because of that. But, geez, World War One was a real mess. Even comedies got depressing when they took on World War One. There was an English comedy, Blackadder. They did an entire season on the World War One front, and at the very end of that season series, all the characters ended up being killed in combat.
Oh yeah. I guess World War One, in a sense, was a Vietnam or Afghan War of its era. I mean, you kind of think of maybe more like the Afghan War than Vietnam. What happened in World War One? It seemed like everybody got killed in combat. Just, as you said, just an absolutely awful war. Not that all wars aren't awful. And that's why major powers don't really fight wars anymore. They just build huge, expensive weapon systems on both sides to make all their, to make their military-industrial complexes rich. Go ahead.
Yes, killing as an industry has become unfortunately cleaner and more expensive and able to be detached from individuals, so it's not their fault. They're sitting in a booth pushing some buttons. It wasn't them that blew up someone's wedding party or some such. So unfortunately, that aspect. But yeah, it was a trench war. Trench wars are really bad. You know, they just sit there and keep shooting at each other until until unfortunately they run out of troops, not just that they run out of ammunition. Probably would have been nicer if ammunition was the bottleneck, but it was living bodies. And so trench wars leave, you know, it killed the flower of young France and England and Germany, and left cripples and kind of evil people just kind of crawling around looking for revenge.
Well, in a very real sense, historically, the result of World War One was World War Two.
Well, like I said before, for the most part, if you really look into it, World War One lay the seeds for World War Two. You know, it's just the Versailles Treaty was just asking for trouble. And again, the Allies learned from their mistakes, at least at that point, and they did not repeat them. They did not kick Germany into the dirt and then wait for them to come back and smack us again. So it was a very successful way of ending World War II, as opposed to the dumb way we ended World War One.
Well, given the way the Soviets, you know, dismembered Germany and took over a good portion of Eastern Europe, not everybody probably agrees with you, but the outcome in the long run has turned out to be better. Not perfect, but better. Go ahead.
Well, the art of politics is compromise. We are fortunate that Adolf Hitler rejected his own advice in Mein Kampf about a two-front war. He got cocky, he decided that he could take on the Western powers and the Eastern powers simultaneously. And if not for that, probably history would have gone quite different.
Well, you know, you don't know. Was there the advantage in World War II where, you know, the United States was really united, so to speak, at least based on what I hear, and everyone kind of got together and did what they had to do, just the opposite of what's happened in our recent wars and in the pandemic, you know, where nobody's cooperated with anybody. Go ahead.
Well, as far as I'm aware, it wasn't, human beings aren't that clean and intelligent, and I don't think it was that clean and intelligent even back then. There were pro-Germans, what's-his-face, the guy who flew around the world, I forget his name offhand. There were Bund meetings, a massive Madison Square Garden had pro-German Bund meetings, I think a year before we got into the war. There was a lot of arguments between, Germany was a strong country, we should back Germany, England is a weak country, French is a weak country, and there was a lot of nonsense going on. It was sort of only that for some reason the Germans allied with the Japanese, and the Japanese expanded into Asia and attacked us in Hawaii. They kind of finally dragged us in. I mean, FDR was kind of subsidizing the Allies, but the country really fell in on the side of the Allies after Hawaii was bombed.
Let's try this again. Echo Link is letting me transmit now. Yeah, well, what's the point? I know before World War II there was already the American First garbage and the Bund garbage and stuff like that. But once the war started, apparently, that, at least as I understand it, that all pretty much disappeared. And the country united. That did not happen in World War I, as I understand it. That did not, of course, happen in Vietnam. That did not happen with Afghanistan. It certainly didn't happen with the pandemic. We just don't get that kind of unity of purpose anymore, it seems. Go ahead.
you have to keep in mind that that was the only war that I can think of where our territory was attacked. Vietnam stayed in Vietnam. World War One, you know, what, they sank the Lusitania wasn't ours. This was in World War II, the Korean War, no one came and bombed us. Vietnam, no one bombed us. Even you know, really, the other little skirmishes, no one bombed us. But the one place and one time that someone actually had the temerity of bombing us was Pearl Harbor. So I think that made a big difference, personally. I could be wrong. I wasn't alive at the time. But that's what I sense. I sense that the country, when we get attacked, you know, when they knocked over the World Trade Centers, we got real angry in a pretty much unified way. There were a couple stragglers, but for the most, early on, everyone was gung-ho. So I think the big difference is whether or not we're physically attacked or not.
Certainly there was some unity of purpose, but, you know, the problem is the attack wasn't from the nation of Afghanistan. You know, it's not that simple. It was by some terrorist group that was actually based somewhere else, in Saudi Arabia, which is ostensibly a U.S. ally that the U.S. is making a lot of money from. So we didn't want to blame Saudi, but the bases were in Afghanistan, so we blamed Afghanistan. I'm not really sure whether that was correct or not. There was probably, you know, a lot of other stuff going on. But anyway, yeah, for a while there was a lot of unity of purpose there, and then after a couple of years people lost interest because, you know, bombing the heck out of Afghanistan really wasn't accomplishing anything after a while. Go ahead.
I think Afghanistan has been a mistake through the history of mankind. It started, at least from my memory, with Alexander the Great. Every single person kind of coveted some aspect of it. It's rich in mineral resources. It's rich in opium, if that's what you're looking for. And countries have spent the last over 2,000 years invading it, trying to capture it. Everyone hides in caves and kills the people who are trying to take over the country, and then hands it back to the Afghanis, and then the cycle repeats over and over and over and over and over again. We just traded places with the Soviet Union. It seems to be an endless thing there. I don't understand quite why.
Yeah, well, my impression is the current government there is going to fall yet again, and we're going to wind up back there within 5 years, if not sooner. But, yeah, I remember talking to a tank officer in 1981, who was in one of my grad school classes at the time that was after Russia invaded Afghanistan, and he said, that's ridiculous. They're not going to win there. Nobody can operate tanks in the Khyber Pass and win a war. And he turned out to be exactly right about the Russians. And then, of course, we tried it with, you know, all our tanks and helicopters and heavy equipment, and we couldn't do it either. So, yeah, everybody's tried it with everything from elephants to Abrams tanks, and none of that stuff works.
Well, I hope for a change we all leave them alone, and maybe they'll just do their own thing by themselves. You know, unfortunately, being the teacher for the classroom that is the world tends to come with a real heavy price and no gratitude whatsoever. So, you know, maybe we should just let the world go on to one degree or another. At least with Afghanistan. Again, we're talking more than 2,000 years of people making the same mistake repeatedly. It's time to give that country a break for a generation or two.
Yeah, well, Vietnam seems to be doing relatively well, just being left to itself. And in fact, I believe, though, they kind of try to keep it low profile. Apparently, it's considered a military ally now. And our ships make port calls there, et cetera, which is kind of interesting. And in the case of the airliner, the Indonesian airliner that disappeared years ago, the only ones who tracked it accurately, apparently, were the Vietnamese, the air defense establishment, since they kind of learned from the best by tracking and fighting on B-52s. That's kind of ironic, isn't it? Anyway, I think it's getting kind of late. And I've got some stuff to do. I do some freelance work, but don't have a real job anymore. But I think you do. So 7-3. Enjoy the night. Fun talking to you, Roy. I understand the KCRC net is on EchoLink now, so I may try to get in there on one Tuesday night. WB2BX. So have a good night.
You too, Frank. Yeah, I put it on EchoLink. Tuesday night at 9 p.m. And also my technical net, I have a technical net there as well, is on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. You're always welcome.
Yeah, okay, very good. I know the guys there know me. I understand some of the old-timers, so to speak, are still on there. Anyway, let me let you go. It's getting late here. WB2BXO, night.
Yeah, Frank, I basically inherited your position. I'm the secretary of the club. Now I'm acting president because the second president in a row resigned, so I'm stuck with that for a couple of months until I can find a new president. Anyway, 73, have a good night. I'll talk to you soon. Always a pleasure.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is N2D2R listening. Am I making a repeater?
W2VL repeater.
Here is N2D2I. Am I making a repeater? This is Paul from Mount Vernon, New York, Westchester County, right next to the Bronx, New York City border line. N2D2I listening. I'm making a repeater. This is N2D2I. N2DQI listening. Here is N2DQI listening.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.